right, everybody. Welcome to Hino's Home Show. Welcome back. I'm Hino. This right here is my home show. I'm joined, as always, by the great Steve Kenny, mortgage processor extraordinaire. And we are brought to you by the Ackridge Mortgage Group. If you're looking to buy or refinance a house, give them a shout at accuratemtg.com. They'll get you closed and back to life. So we love that about them. We got a great show for you this week. We're going to talk a little bit about something that's on everybody's mind right now, and that's being able to make your mortgage payment in light of the crisis that's going on. Some people are having a hard time with that because of, you know, not working at the moment. So we're going to talk about your options there, and then we're going to visit with John Bell of Bell Law. We're going to talk about estate planning and some of the other issues and things that come up when you're buying or refinancing a house that you probably need to know about. But Steve, how are you doing this week?
I'm doing pretty good, Hino. I'm not going to lie. It's been kind of a crazy week. Things are kind of changing a lot. So
I don't know what day it is half the time.
Yeah, that's the truth. Yeah, so you know, like I said, things have been changing a lot for us. And as we kind of talk to people in different industries, which it's really cool that what you and I do, we get to talk to people who do all kinds of
different things.
So everybody's kind of being affected by all the stuff that's going on a little bit differently. You know, some companies are reducing hours. Some companies are, you know, busier than they've ever been before.
I hear liquor store sales are up like 50, 60%.
I believe
it. I think they're the only companies that are actually doing better now.
Yeah. Oh, I totally believe that. Yeah. Them, the grocery stores. I mean, any of that kind of essential stuff. Like, yeah they are jamming right now. So, so it's been kind of interesting. So, like, there's some stuff that's changing, and it's kind of continuing to change within our market itself. So mortgages, a lot of companies are kind of changing some of their overlays. They're getting rid of some of the products that they've had. You know, an example of that is actually just this week, Wells Fargo is no longer going to do jumbo loans.
Yeah. And a lot of other companies had already stopped doing jumbo loans.
Right.
And they were kind of like the big holdout, and boom, now they're not doing them either. So
yeah,
that's a big deal, especially because most loans in higher priced areas are jumbo loans.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, there is some consideration for like super high cost areas. So, you know, if you think of like LA or New York,
San Francisco.
Yeah, that's a great example. So there's a little bit higher conforming limit, and conforming is what
but it's
think
not
of,
that high.
Yeah, it's not that high.
Yeah.
So anything that's over that conforming limit, wherever you are in the country, that's considered jumbo.
Yeah. Yeah. Well obviously the thing that's worrying a lot of people is, how do I make my mortgage payment? I just got, you know, furloughed at work and I don't have a paycheck coming in, or a partial paycheck. What do I do? You know, because this is not just one person. This is like millions of people now all of a sudden can't make their mortgage payment. That's a big deal. I think Mr. Cooper, which is one of the bigger servicers in the country, they say that as of not too long ago, a few days ago, over 86,000 people, or almost 3% of their total loan portfolio, has requested payment relief.
Wow.
That's huge.
That is huge.
And that's probably just getting started.
And that's just one company, too.
That's just one company. Yeah. So what options are available to people who can't make their payment? You know, obviously there's got to be some relief there.
Yeah, there is. And this was one of the cool things that was passed as part of, you know, the, I don't want to call it a bailout because it's not really a bailout.
Yeah.
But part of the COVID relief fund that's gone through Congress, let's call it that. So one of the provisions they've allowed is anybody who's been affected by the current situation, the COVID-19, whether it means you've gotten reduced hours, or maybe you got sick and couldn't go to work, even though your company is still operating normally. You know, if any way you were affected by the current situation of what's going on, you have the option to reach out to your company about doing a what's called a forbearance.
Or
there's another option out there about payment deferrals, and they're very similar, but there's a couple of differences. But so anybody who's been affected, you have some options. Now, it's kind of like anything in life, nothing's free. So there's some ramifications that come from that, but...
And the way the different companies out there are handling those options does vary.
Yes.
So definitely call your company and find out how they're doing it, because what you hear from somebody about how they did it with their company might not be the same with what you're doing.
Right.
So one of the things you just mentioned that's different, there's a forbearance and then there's a payment deferral. And you know, what the difference is between those things. So basically a payment deferral, you're just basically making an agreement to make that payment at a later time. So, okay, I can't pay you this week, I'll pay you next week kind of thing, you know, although it's maybe next month or something, you know, but you still got to make that payment. Whereas a forbearance, they just put payments on hold for a while, The interest still accrues, so you do still ultimately owe the money, but the payments are paused for a period of time. I think 3 months is the minimum, and then that can be extended depending on your case up to about a year.
Yeah, I think it is up to 12 months as a maximum.
Yeah.
So if let's talk about that. So let's say that I apply for a forbearance, and also too, you know, I want to comment on this because I've seen a bunch of this in the news kind of before we get back into the forbearance thing. Due to one, this option of people being able to apply for a forbearance, but then also you've got like the small business loans and all that kind of stuff.
Right, right.
Banks are really overwhelmed right now. So
oh, yeah.
We're seeing a lot of extended call times or wait times when people call in and they want to talk to someone about their situation. I think the Mortgage Bankers Association came out last week and said calls went up from an average of like 4 minutes up to like 22 or something like that. I could be off on the exact numbers, but hold times are a lot higher. And so typically a lender has a lot of stuff going on right now. And so if you're going to apply for this, just kind of be ready for that, I guess is all I want
to
say.
Yeah, and be ready to be on hold for a while.
Yeah. It's not that the company is trying to prevent you from doing it by any stretch of the imagination. It's just a lot of people are in the same situation you are in a lot more than normal. And so that's one of the things that's going on.
It's probably one of the only times that when you hear the recording that say call times are higher than normal due to increase, that it's actually true.
Yeah.
You know, because I've yeah. been hearing that on call recordings forever, you know?
Yeah.
You know, that's just what they always say.
Yeah. The other one that gets me is please listen to all the options because they've just changed.
Yeah. They change a lot.
Right.
So really one of the questions that I've had asked is, do you have a lump sum that's due at the end of your forbearance? So let's say you get your forbearance for 3 months. You don't have to make a payment. Now, do you have to make like 3 months of payments at one pop at the end of that?
Maybe.
Yeah, could be.
it actually depends on like on what your servicer is going to do. So that is one option. Okay, so they say, all right, for the next 6 months, you don't have to make any payments. And during that 6 months, all that money is going to accrue. And at the end, you're just going to write us a check for $12,000. Well, that is an option, but that's not the only option. So
I would imagine for most people, that's not much of an option. Because if you're not making money during that time, you're not saving up any money either. So how are you going to make that payment of $12,000 or whatever it is at the end of that 3 months or 6 months or whatever it is.
Right, exactly. I agree with that. And there are some unique situations where maybe that could work for you if you're like waiting on a company bonus or something where you're going to come into some money.
Magic fairies are going to drop a pot of gold on your front lawn or something. It could happen.
Yeah, exactly. So that's one option. But what a lot of people are probably going to end up trying to do, and we're not really seeing this yet because we're still kind of so early into what's happening, is a lot of people are going to be able to get with their lender and negotiate, how that repayment works. So if your mortgage payment, let's say, was $2,000 a month normally and you were off for 6 months, well, now that's $12,000 that you've got to pay back.
Right.
Well, now that you're back at work, you might have to tighten up your budget a little bit.
Yeah, maybe they add a certain amount to your payment every month until it's caught up, you know, like $300 or whatever it is that you guys work out.
Yeah, so they'll work with you, hopefully. We're hoping servicers are going to do this to work with you to try and figure out a way that you can repay it without, you know, killing yourself.
Yeah.
The other option, and this is really a last resort, and it's something that, you know, I really try to recommend people stay away from because it's going to hurt your credit and it's going to do a lot of other things.
I know what you're going to say.
Yep, a loan modification. Oof,
dirty word.
Yeah. It is a dirty word, yeah. Yeah, so basically a loan modification is when you contact your lender or your servicer and you say, hey, I can't make payments or I can only make these payments. Let's work out some sort of long-term repayment agreement. And so a modification is a longer-term thing. A forbearance is typically 6 to 12 months.
It's temporary, yeah.
Yeah, a loan mod is typically going to be anything permanent. That's longer than that.
Yeah, it's permanent.
Yeah.
They adjust the terms of your loan going forward. But the hit to your credit for doing that is pretty bad.
Yes. And there's one other unintended consequence of this, too, that I've seen actually probably three times in the last 12 months, just to make people aware of, is when you do loan modifications, sometimes they will take a portion of your balance, let's say $50,000 off whatever you owe on your mortgage, and they're going to set it to the side. It's not going to collect any interest, but you're also not going to make any payments on it.
Right. Makes your payment lower.
That makes your payment lower because you're paying back on a smaller amount.
But
there's always a but. when you go to sell or refinance, that $50,000 that's just sitting over there is due.
And that does catch some people by surprise who maybe didn't pay full attention to what was going on. And they see their mortgage statement has a balance of, let's just say, $100,000. And they're like, okay, let's refinance and get that, you know, get that $100,000 or whatever it is. And then all of a sudden it's like, what? There's this other $50,000 I got to pay back. I forgot all about that.
Yeah. And the way that we usually find that actually is on title. And we're going to talk to a title attorney here in a little bit.
That's right. So one of the questions that gets asked is, what kind of fees or interest is charged during the missed payments, during the forbearance? And typically what we've seen with lenders for the most part is no additional interest or additional late payments are charged during that time. So it's just as if your regular mortgage payments were happening. That interest and that payment is due, but no additional penalties beyond that.
Yeah. And again, your mileage may vary.
That's true.
Every servicer is a little bit different.
That's true. And one of the other questions that came up is can you make partial payments during that time? And let's say you've got a 3-month forbearance, but you find yourself in a position where you can make a payment. Can you do that? Yes, you can do that. And all that will do is lessen the amount that you're going to have to pay later. So actually, I think the servicer would very much appreciate that. So, yes. So they're not going to have a problem with that whatsoever. But yeah, those are basically the options. So those are basically the options. So my advice would be call your servicer if you find yourself in a position where you can't make your payments or you're having a hard time, and work something out with them, because they do have an incentive to do something right now because of what was passed by Congress. So there is some help there for you. So go check that out. We're going to be back in just a few minutes with some more of Hinos Home Show. We're going to have John Bell of Bell Law join us and talk to us about some of the ins and outs of not only title, but all the other cool and interesting stuff that happens when you buy or refinance a house. We'll be right back.
Well, I got my first truck when I was 3, drove 100,000 miles on my knees, hauled marbles and rocks and thought twice before I hauled a Barbie doll bed for the girl next door. She tried to pay me with a kiss and I began to understand there's something women like about a pickup man.
Oh yeah, welcome back to Hinos Home Show. We all love the pickup man. Unfortunately, lost Joe Diffie not too long ago, so a little shout out to him and his family there. We're sure going to miss him. Well, joining us in the studio now is John Bell, president and owner of Bell Law Settlement, right? Correct. Here in Nashville. He's been a real estate attorney here in town for over 20 years, so he's got a lot of experience. And we want to kind of pick his brain this week about some of the things that go on every transaction. One thing that I think a lot of people are confused about, not even sure why they're paying for or what they're paying for, is title insurance. That is part of every transaction, every purchase, every refinance, all involves title insurance. So, John, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good to be here. Love your studio.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you very much. So, you know, in its most basic and in most basic definition, what is title?
Well, title is the title to the house. Like, okay. You know, I think everybody's familiar with a car.
Yeah.
You've got the, you know, the green.
So that's title.
Yeah.
Title insurance.
Is, you know, you own the house. It's the deed to the house.
Right.
So you want to ensure that deed says that you're the sole owner. Or you may own it with a spouse or a friend or whatever.
Or whoever you buy
it with. Whoever is on the deed, those people or entities, you know, can be owned by corporations and LLCs, want to know that someone else is not going to come in and have a claim to that land. And how that would work is, as land is subdivided, there are a lot of times it's conveyed after the owner died by the heirs, and that's normal. And if one of the heirs gets left out, and this is just one example, gets left out of the distribution of the proceeds, they can come back on this new owner and say, well, you know, I still own a fourth of that. I didn't sign the deed. I had interest in it. So you don't have anybody making claims. Let me give you some others that may be a little easier to understand. If somebody worked on the house before you bought it, and it was within a year that they worked on it, and the seller didn't pay them, they can put a mechanics lien in Tennessee on your property. So here you are having to pay for the seller's you know, work that they did. Obviously, you could go back and sue the seller, but they may not have the money even if you win.
So title insurance basically protects you from those claims. Right. If something were to arise in the future that nobody noticed,
right,
then the insurance covers you for that, and that, so that it's not coming out of your pocket.
Right. But also what we do is, what the Register of Deeds office does, they have a record of every deed on land in Tennessee since basically it was granted. Tennessee was granted the land from the federal government. And, you know, they sort of took from Native Americans. But anyway, you've got every inch of Tennessee is owned by somebody, and that's all of record in the Register of Deeds office. But it also goes back to, we can see who, let's just take, say, if someone's buying a home. We go back 30 years and look at each owner that owned it to make sure they didn't have a judgment lien, a tax lien, or some other mortgage or what have you. And so after that title search is done, all those defects are removed. So if we miss a defect, that's another thing that title insurance insures.
Well, I was going to ask you some of that. So those are the obvious things that, that title insurance can find. Sure. What are some of the things that maybe title and your title searches or whatever it is that you do when you research all this can't find and sometimes comes up?
Well, the main things you can't find are things that aren't recorded. Mm-hmm. So the mechanics lien is an example. By statute, if you worked on a house, you have a year. You have 90 days to file the mechanics lien and then a year to perfect it or take it to court. So that could be something.
And a mechanics lien, just so people understand, that's if somebody did work on your house and you didn't pay them, they could put a mechanics lien on your property. Right. For whatever you owe them. So yes. if they did a plumbing job for you and you didn't pay them,
exactly.
They could put a mechanics lien on your house.
It's technically a mechanics and materialman's lien. That's the legal language. There's one story, I'll tell you that. Then I want to tell you another thing about what title insurance covers that a lot of people don't realize. There was a family, a wealthy family, that had property all over the U.S., but they also had property in China. They were a Chinese family.
Okay.
They lived half the year in China and half the year in the U.S. Well, folks bought a house from this family, and the son came and signed the deed and, you know, presented his driver's license, signed the deed. They got the house. And then, so the people are in their house. They've been there a year or two, and then the authorities come, and they say, hey, this is not your house. The person that sold you the house was impersonating someone, and it's not your house anymore. Well, title insurance paid that claim. What happened was the son killed his parents and his brother,
told everybody
they were in China when they asked about him, went and got a driver's license with his brother's birth certificate. So he had his brother's driver's license, and he disposed of all this property and just kept all the money.
Wow. That's crazy. Who sees that coming?
Yeah.
So when you say that the title insurance company settled the claim, what did they pay? They just paid off the mortgage or something?
Well,
or what?
They paid off the they either pay off the mortgage or the seller.
Okay.
Now, in this case, the seller would have been the family. That family would have had an estate and had an estate lawyer that would be trying to recover those assets
okay.
for the estate.
So then ultimately, did they get to stay in the house by paying it off?
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow.
And that's the point.
Well, I've heard that there could be other things, like what if marital status was wrong on the application or something, and it turns out at later that the person you bought the house from was married and nobody knew it, and nobody got the spouse's signature to say that it was okay to sell the house. Is that another issue that might come up?
Yeah, it can. But that would be insured, because in the title search that I described, as we go back and look at one deed and the deed before that and the deed before that, and we research the person's name to see if there's any liens. If the spouse was on title, then the spouse would have to sign to convey it to the
right.
other person. That would be caught. What's not caught is if they're not married, if they're married. Well, let me give one example. We've had folks, or the industry have had folks, where they come in and they're married and they bring the wife, sell the house, and they take all the money, but the wife is actually the girlfriend. The wife didn't know anything about it. So she was impersonating the wife. That would be another, you know, title claim.
Yeah.
And that's on the title company to get the proper identification and so forth.
So what's the difference when you see on most closing statements, there's owner's title insurance and lender's title insurance? What's the difference between the two?
Well, title insurance is driven a lot by lenders because there's no lender that will lend money on a house without title insurance. They can't have their portfolio of real estate loans not knowing if they have clear title to the house. Yeah. There's not some claim like we've been talking about.
Right.
Now, where the lenders use their title insurance a lot, their policies, is when the house is foreclosed on. Because it's not unusual that if the person that wasn't paying their mortgage, they got liens on the house and that kind of thing. So a lot of times when a house is foreclosed on, they'll call us and we'll have to review everything and see if there is a claim. Usually there's not. The foreclosure people just throw everything at us to make sure there's not a claim. But lenders use that quite a bit, and as you can imagine. The other reason that lenders require title insurance, and this is probably one of the main reasons that title insurance exists, and that is that when I close a loan for you and you wire me $300,000, well, I can just take the $300,000, go to Aruba, be all good, everything's fine, except for me when they catch me.
Right.
But you won't send me the money unless I send you a closing protection letter, CPL, and that's what that is. So what that does is if the attorney runs off with the money, the title insurance company replaces it.
Okay.
So you would never send money to all these title companies without that insurance that money's insured in case. Let's say somebody didn't go to Aruba, but let's just say my escrow account was way out of whack and you know, we had paid somebody off twice and just didn't have the money. You know, then the closing protection letter, the CPL, does that.
And that protects the lender.
Yeah, so really there would be no closings without title insurance. If not for anything else, for all the other things we talked about, for that closing protection letter for the lender.
Wow. So how long does coverage last? Is it like an annual thing? Or?
No, it lasts as long as you own the house.
So if you own the house for 30 years, that insurance is good that entire time until it changes hands again.
Yeah, it's only insuring the time before you bought it.
Okay.
So after if you bought it, if you get a tax lien on your house, well, the insurance ain't going to cover that.
Right.
So it lasts forever. If you think about it, when you get a deed in Tennessee, it's normally conveyed by a warranty deed. Mm-hmm. And did you ever ask yourself what the warranty is? The warranty is that there's no claims on the property, and that individual has to stand for that.
Wow.
But you also, because who knows if that individual can't, you know, would have the money to stand for it or whatever, you really get the warranty with the title insurance policy that you know there's no claims on.
What would, just an off-the-wall question, what would happen if, you know, 20 years from now, the title insurance company that issued the policy goes out of business? Are you out of luck at that point?
Yeah, you're probably out of luck at that point, but insurance companies are highly regulated. Their reserves are highly regulated, and they are, you know, rated by Best, AM Best, and the rating companies, Moody's and stuff. There's the big four in our business. That's First American, Fidelity, which is lawyers.
Mm-hmm. Chicago.
Chicago Title, Old Republic, and Stewart Title. So those are Fortune 500 multinational conglomerates. They do more than just title insurance. So probably be unlikely for them.
They're going to be around.
It's important when you get title insurance to kind of know, you know, which company they're underwriting it through for that reason you just described.
Yeah, sounds like they would be around. You know what else is going to be around? You, because we're going to keep you over for another segment. So we got to take a quick break right now, but we're going to come back with a whole lot more fascinating talk with John Bell of Bell Law Settlement right here on Hinos Home Show. Welcome back to Hino's Home Show. That's a little John Prine, another one of the greats we just lost recently. Been losing a lot of them lately.
Yeah.
I tell you, but that one hurt. He's a great, great songwriter and left a real mark on the industry. So many great hit songs he's written, not only for himself and for other people over the years. That song we just played, Angel from Montgomery, Bonnie Raitt had a big hit with that one. Some years ago. But we're here with John Bell of Bell Law, and of course, as always, Steve Kenny of Accurate Mortgage, along with me, joining us in the studio here. And we were just talking in the last segment about title insurance, but title companies do more than just title insurance, at least in Tennessee, right? They actually facilitate the kind of the closing of the entire deal, whether you're doing a refinance or a purchase. What exactly do you guys do, just for the average person? What do you do?
Yeah, let me give you just a rundown of kind of what the process is, okay? So the consumer goes out, they look at houses, they make an offer, the seller accepts the offer, it's signed by both parties, and it's now binding. Now, and in that contract, there are different clauses. There usually is an inspection clause where the buyer can have an inspection.
Right.
After inspection's done, then, you know, they can ask the seller to fix some things. So that's just an example of one of the things in the contract, how much the earnest money is, who's holding the earnest money, and those kind of things. So after you make the offer, your real estate agent sends us the legal contract, and we go through it to see what all of the prerequisites are that are going to have to be done before it closes. And usually it's inspection, appraisals, getting the loan approved for the buyer. And so there's all that situation. So we get the contract, and the first thing we do is what we call search the title. And that's where we go back 30 years to all the owners that own that property to make sure there's no claims on it, tax liens, judgment liens, or old mortgages. A lot of people might have gotten a heating and air system financed by their electric company. Well, they put a UCC-1, which is a type of lien, Uniform Commercial Code, Section 1, which is a lien on the heating and air unit, but it's attached to the house, so it can't, you know, that has to get paid off. So,
right.
We do all that background, and then you are getting the consumer, the buyer, you're getting all your inspections done, you're getting your
appraisal done, all the stuff that we need to do for the mortgage, yeah.
Right, and that's a lot of it. You'll deal with your lender through that process more than you would with the title company, but people do want to know what the title company is kind of doing, so that's what, I think that's a great question. So, while you're doing all that, we're searching the title to make sure it's clean and actually clearing those. There can be an old mortgage that you paid off that it just wasn't released. So we call the mortgage company.
We just had that happen recently. Yeah. So it does happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And, of course, it's really interesting when the mortgage company's out of business or, you know.
Yeah, we've had that too.
Yeah. But anyway, so that's what we're doing. So then we get an order from the lender. We get an order from us,
yeah.
And that tells us what the loan amount's going to be, and we start preparing the settlement statement. And that's essentially what's done at the settlement. There's money that comes in and money that goes out that's on the settlement statement, and we handle all the money.
So you make sure everybody gets paid. So right. You're the disinterested third party that collects all the money and distributes it appropriately to whoever's supposed to get paid.
So that's how we're able to handle all the money, and we balance that escrow account daily, actually. But, for example, what the money comes in to buy the house, but the money has to go out to pay the appraiser. The money has to go out to pay the mortgage company. The money has to go out to pay the register of deeds, to record the deed, and to record the mortgage. We have to calculate the tax on the deed and on the mortgage because there's a tax.
The homeowner's insurance needs to get paid.
Homeowner's needs to get paid. So every line item on that settlement statement is going to somebody. And then after all those deductions, the remainder goes to the seller, and that's what they get for their net proceeds from the sale.
Okay.
And so once everybody signs all of their documents, you then have to go and like record all of that with the county, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that way that shows up in public records.
Right.
Once you paid everybody and then once you record all the deed and the mortgage and all that stuff with the county, is there anything else that you guys do after that?
Well, yeah, what we do after that is after the deed is recorded, we get we get the original back. So you actually get the original deed. And after about 30 days, we will mail you your deed, and we'll have the recorder stamp on it and your title insurance policy. So that's what we do after the closing.
And who holds on to that once you get it back?
Well, you talking about the deed?
Yeah, all those things that you just mentioned that have the original stamp to show that it was recorded. Do you send that back to the lender? Do you send it to...
No, we send the deed of trust back to the lender, and we send the deed back to the owner.
Okay.
And so, you know, that's kind of how that works. But that's a good point. We do have to send the lender their owner's, their loan policy and their recorded deed of trust.
Okay.
But the thing about it is Tennessee is a race notice state. So really who owns that property is who gets to the register of deeds office first. That's the race part of it.
Really?
Yeah. Nice.
Now, if you had actual notice, then the race part doesn't count. But if you didn't have actual notice that somebody else bought it or somebody else put a lien on it, then whoever gets there first, they're in priority. And that comes into play with you guys, because if we don't record your deed of trust as the first mortgage, if there's another mortgage in front of it that gets recorded before we do, let's say they go out and do a home equity line and don't realize it, and they record before we record, then we're all upside down and,
oh boy,
and that kind of stuff. So having it in the register of deeds office is what makes you own the property. The deed makes you own the property, but to all the world, it's been the recordation in the register's office.
Interesting. Wow. Yeah, you know, actually going back to something you were just saying about racing, and if they, you know, go to another lender and get a line of credit and that gets filed first, and then this, you know, the lien positions are all out of place. There were actually a lot of issues with that 10 years ago. Actually, probably a little bit more than that now, right before the financial crash. So they would go and they would go to like four different mortgage companies and try and close them all in the same day. So that way, you know, all of those,
they all didn't know about each other.
Exactly. Yeah. And then at that point, you know, there's four different liens on it. And on a $400,000 house, there's $1.6 million in liens on it. Well, that's not going to work.
Right.
So so one of the things that we as lenders have actually changed, and this is, again, something that's really only happened kind of in the last 10 years. And you as a borrower, you know, you may hear this, or a lot of times it happens and there's no consequence. But we as lenders are now actually doing a soft credit pull. So it does not affect your score. But we do a soft credit pull right before we issue the clear to close on your loan. And the intention of that is to make sure that you're not going out and taking out additional debts. An example of that could be talking to another mortgage company and trying to get another mortgage at the same time you're doing one with us. So that is something that's kind of new as of the last 10 years that lenders are doing. And so as a borrower, you know, if you call or you get an indication about having a credit pull on your credit, it's not going to hurt your credit, but we're doing it just to update the information to make sure that you're not doing anything fraudulent.
There you go.
Well, John, go ahead.
That's another reason to have, you know, why title insurance? Why won't a lender lend the money without the title insurance? Well, that's, you know, if a borrower is committing loan fraud and closing at four places at the same time, those lenders would get repaid
because they all would have had mortgage insurance and title insurance.
And we're not really worried about the borrower in this case, because right, that's the one,
yeah, you know,
doing
well, we up. Care that he ends up where he's supposed to.
Yeah. Well, listen, we've only got about a minute left here, but I wanted to ask you about something. There's a lot of people staying away from each other right now because of the whole COVID-19 thing. So how are you guys handling that when you guys all have to get in a room with somebody and sign all this big stack of papers?
Well, that's a great idea. We have an 8-foot conference table, and we have a television at one end, and the folks sit at the other end. They get a brand new pen, and they take the pen with them. Nobody else has touched it. The entire room is wiped down after each closing. Only the signers can come to the closing.
Okay.
Everybody else, and there's no one can be in the waiting room. You have to wait in your car. And that's one way we're doing it.
Well, how about mobile notaries? Like, if you're going to somebody's notaries going to their house, now they maybe don't want to go.
Well, what we're doing on the mobile notary situation is we're basically delivering the package to the front door. They take the documents, and then we kind of go over them on the phone with them.
Okay.
And then they set them back out, and we pick them up, and we drive away.
Okay. Didn't Governor Lee just announce something?
Yeah, Governor Lee announced that there may some ways we may be able to. Everybody's been able to DocuSign to sign online.
Right.
Because you do that with your real estate contracts. Sure. But why can't you sign your loan papers that way?
Well, I've wondered that.
You can legally, but the lenders, they don't have their notes and things, and it's they could possibly lose money, so they haven't really gotten on board with that. But what the problem has been is you can sign online, but you couldn't notarize online, and the governor is going to let us, and we're still working on the details on that and if the title insurance companies will insure it, to see if we could sort of like by FaceTime, you know, you sign the documents and then we notarize them.
So they can notarize even though they're not directly in front of the person, they're virtually in front of the right. person. And so, but you, like you were saying, the lenders around the country have to agree to that, or the underwriters around the right. country have to agree to that so that it works.
Right.
So it's only half of it that the governor says we can do it. Now the industry has right. to also say, all right, we'll go along with that.
Right. And also we're doing the power of attorney. You can get a power of attorney signed and notarized, and we can sign for you.
So. All right, great. Well, listen, we got to take another quick break. We got one more great segment with John Bell coming up here that you're not going to want to miss, kind of about estate planning and how to make sure that your family gets your house when all is said and done. So come on back here to Hino's Home Show. Welcome back to Hino's Home Show. I'm not sure, but I think that Stacy's mom has got it going on. I'm not sure if that was made clear enough, but yeah, that was written and performed there by lead singer Adam Schlesinger of Fountains of Wayne. He also just passed recently. Another one of the big hit songwriters that we've lost recently. So just wanted to give his music a little shout out there. We're here with.
I'm getting depressed, Hino.
Are you?
People dying on your bumper music here.
I'm so sorry. We're here with John Bell of Bell Settlement, or Bell Law and Settlement. And, of course, Steve Kenny's here with us. So we wanted to chat with you a little bit this segment, John, about estate planning and kind of the basics of that, what most people should do if you've got a home and you want to make sure you leave it to your family. If I'm understanding this correctly, the basic concept behind doing that kind of estate planning is to try to avoid unnecessary taxes
right.
that your heirs might have to pay.
Right. There is the estate tax, which is a federal tax, but right now it has an $11 million exemption. So,
I might just squeeze in under that. Yeah.
the tax planning part of it is, you know, for high net worth individuals right now. Of course, they could, you know, move it back down, they being the Congress. The Republicans want to do away with the tax completely. In fact, the Republicans in Tennessee have. There's no state inheritance tax.
Okay.
So,
otherwise known as the death tax, they call it. Yeah,
exactly. That's what the Republicans call it. The other folks on the other side, they want to sort of break up monopolies and redistribute the wealth. Is kind of the reason for it. But anyway, our law firm does real estate law, obviously. We do business law because we have investors to set up LLCs. And then we do estate law. And the reason we do that, because a lot of land passes when somebody dies, if you think about it. So we were faced with, and our law firm supports our title company, and those are the areas we practice in. So we got into it by doing wills for folks, having them probated to where they can actually get the deed into the heirs' names. So if the person has a will, we have to go and get that in probate court to where they can take title to do it. But for folks that are wanting to, you know, are concerned about how their assets are going to be distributed at their death, you can do a will or you can do a trust. The difference is a revocable living trust, when the grantor dies, then all the trustee distributes all the money to the beneficiaries, and you don't have to that extra step of going through probate court.
Okay, and so the person who sets up the trust, let's say I'm doing one, mm-hmm. I would pick somebody to be the trustee. Let's say I pick Steve, and Steve is going to, when I pass, he's going to make sure that my wishes are carried out, that, you know, right. so-and-so gets this, and so-and-so gets that, and all that kind of stuff.
Right, and you can also find hire professional trustees just think of Wilson Bank and Trust or the other banks.
Okay.
That whole trust part is...
That's what they do.
They held the money. They have professional trustees who...
Okay.
Because some trusts will have it where the proceeds are distributed to the beneficiary, maybe as an allowance. So
oh, yeah.
Per
yeah.
Year
if, especially if it's a huge amount of money and it's a minor that you're dealing with.
Well, yeah, with a minor, you'd have to have that. You'd have to have a guardian ad litem too. But...
That's where that term trust fund baby comes in.
Aha.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly. Well, a lot of times they'll restrict the distribution because they're concerned that if the child got it all at once, they might blow it all.
Yeah. So then what's the difference then between just doing a will? You know, let's say I just write one up myself or just do one of those online things that you can do these days versus setting up a trust. What's the difference between, what's the benefit to me one over the other?
Well, the benefit is that the primary benefit is that you don't have to go through probate court, that the assets are distributed by the trustee at the death of the grantor of the trust. But what people need to know is everybody that lives in Tennessee has a will, whether they know it or not, and it's written by the state legislature.
Okay, and what's that?
That will says, and it's called intestate succession. Intestate means you didn't have a will. Succession is where your property goes. But it goes first to your wife. If you have, or your spouse, your husband, then to your children, no children, then to your parents, no parents, then your brothers and sisters. And eventually, if you don't have any heirs, it goes to the state of Tennessee and just goes in the general fund.
Okay. And that's,
but you don't want that. At least, you
that's
know,
a long no, process,
it,
right?
Well, no, but what I'm saying is if you have no heirs, have a will or a trust prepared where at least your estate goes to a charity that you like.
Or somebody that you like.
Anybody
yeah.
besides the state of Tennessee.
Right.
You know,
right. So then that's what happens if you have a will. If you, either whether you have a will or if you don't have a will,
right.
It goes through that process. So then.
Well, no. If you have a will, then your assets are distributed according to.
But it does still have to go to probate, right?
But it has to go to probate.
Okay.
And, you know, if you're single and young, you don't have any debts, you don't have any children. You know, the other, and most wills are, you know, if I die, it goes to my spouse or the other one's spouse. But
yeah.
you can die at the same time. Where it's really important is these days, when you have children by one marriage and the husband has children by one marriage and you get married, then where is it all going to go?
Yeah.
And if you don't take care of that, your children could be completely cut out by your new spouse.
I see.
And then even if you're young and don't have a lot of assets, if you have children, you want to have the name of the person that's going to, if you both died at the same time in a car or a plane or something, who's going to take the children?
Mm-hmm.
And you'd want to, you know, talk to them, see if they would be willing to take your children in case something happened and put that in your will.
Okay. So you don't necessarily need
or
to do
trust.
A trust.
Right. Your trust is really when your assets, when you're able to accumulate a few more assets, maybe some rental homes,
mm-hmm.
those kind of things.
The type of thing where it would probably generate a big tax bill
right.
to the heirs. Because
well,
I would imagine there might be situations where if the tax bill would be so much that the heir couldn't actually keep the property. They'd have to sell it to pay the bill, right?
Yeah, but again, that $11 million exemption...
That's pretty huge.
Has sort of, you know, done away with that part. But you do need, you know, it does need... You need, do need to make sure that it's that your assets are going where you want them to go.
Okay.
And you can do that with the will or the trust.
Okay, perfect. So one of the other things that I know exists for people trying to, you know, avoid sending a big check to Uncle Sam when they sell a property is the 1031 exchange.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of for people who might be in a situation where they're trying to sell a property and buy another one, explain what that is and why that would benefit them.
Well, when you buy a house like any other asset, you buy a stock or whatever, and it appreciates in value, and you sell it, you have to pay tax on that appreciation. That's mm-hmm. called a capital gain.
Right.
Now, if it's your primary residence, generally, if it's under $500,000 for a married couple, $250,000 for a single person, then you're exempt from the capital gains tax because it's your primary residence. But if you own property, either commercial property or rental houses or whatever, when you go to sell them, you're going to have to pay a 20% is the rate now, 20% tax on that gain, on what you paid for it and all the capital improvements you made to it, cost of sales, whatever profit after those you have to pay that tax on. The IRS in the Internal Revenue Code, Section 1031, you can identify the property when you sell it, and then you have 45 days, 180 days essentially to buy another property, and you don't have to pay the capital gains tax. It just rolls over into the other.
Because you're moving
property.
It from one property to another.
Right.
And that's why it's called an exchange.
Right. You never touch the money. The qualified intermediary, which are the companies that do the exchange, they get the money, they sign a lot of the documents, and they just hold it.
It's like an escrow.
Yeah, an escrow until you find something in that 180 days and you buy it and you pay no tax. So that's a great way to avoid capital gains tax, but you have to have it in place before you sell it. You can't sell it.
And then go figure it out.
Get the money and then give it to a 1031.
Interesting.
Exchanger.
Okay. So let's say you've got a property that you're going to list for sale and your intention is to do a 1031 exchange. Do you need to do that before you even list the property for sale, or once you're under contract, then you can get that set up with the title company or the escrow office?
Right. Yeah. It's a process done from contract to close. You don't have to do it before the contract piece. And the 1031 exchanger has an addendum to the contract, which actually shows them as the seller technically, and some things. So basically you sell it. I mean, you get the contract, you tell your 1031 company, they send all the papers for the buyer to sign and for you to sign, sometimes the title company to sign. And that way, at the closing, the settlement statement, the seller will actually be the 1031 exchanger instead of you. And then that money's free from capital gains tax for 180 days.
So once you close, then you have, I know you said 180 days, you have to close on something else, but do you have to go under contract on a new property within a certain period of time, or is it you just have to close within that 6 months?
Well, you're supposed, that's a great question. You're supposed to identify the property within 45 days and then close on it within 180.
Okay.
Now, some folks will fudge a little bit on the 45 days, but the 180 days you can't extend that.
Yeah. Now, what if you go under contract on a property within the first 45 days and then for some reason you don't close? Can you then go out and identify a new one because you're still within that 6 months?
Yeah, I think so. I think there's allowances for that. But the 180 days. Now, having said that, they just extended the 180 days. If your 180 days was April 1st, if it ended after April 1st, they've extended it to July.
Wow.
So
wow.
Because of the COVID virus.
All right. Well, thank you, John Bell of Bell Law and Settlement, for coming in and talking to us today.
Happy to do it.
Always, always expand our brains with a bunch of knowledge. Where can people find you online?
We are at belllawtn.com.
All right. And you can find us at highnosehomeshow.com. We'd love to hear from you. Give us some questions or let us know what you'd like us to talk about on future episodes. Or if you'd like to come meet us and talk about your mortgage, we'd love to talk to you then too. So, Steve, we'll see you next week.
All right.
And everybody else, see you next week on High Nose Home Show.